Today, we hang out with Rebecca Sturgeon, who is from the UK originally, but living in South Africa and doing what she calls guerrilla prescribing. So guerrilla prescribing means she is doing basic but life-changing prescribing in the townships in South Africa. There's no two-hour consultation asking a patient about their likes and dislikes or their dreams or anything like that. It is basic, effective, rapid prescribing that works. Coming from South Africa myself, I was so intrigued to listen to her stories of going into the townships and working long hours to help people for free who would never otherwise have been able to afford her services. I think that most people from first world countries just wouldn't have any idea of what we mean when we talk about a township. But these are people who are living in severe poverty in unthinkable circumstances. So I truly applaud Rebecca for doing this much needed work. I especially love the synchronicity in this episode because while speaking with Rebecca, I discovered that her mentor, Alvia, who is a lady that was still practicing homeopathy in her 90s, and she only passed away, I think it was last year, and she actually worked with Norma, who is the lady that developed the Narayani remedies. So I thought that was just so cool. Now, if you haven't listened to episode 60 on our show about the Narayani remedies yet, be sure to have a listen. It's fascinating. Rebecca is living the dream in her off-grid Echo Village cabin in South Africa. So the only way to get hold of her is email. So there's no website or anything else I can point you to right now, but we will link her email in the show notes if you wanted to reach out and see if you could help. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we get to hang out with Rebecca Sturgeon in South Africa. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for letting me talk.
It's a pleasure. You said you're in Wilderness. I've never been there myself, but my sister-in-law likes going there on holiday. I know it's really beautiful. Tell us the story of how you were first introduced to homeopathy, and then we'll get a little bit onto what on earth you're doing in South Africa, because people will hear your accent. It's not native. So tell us first, how were you introduced to homeopathy?
I think like a lot of homeopaths actually, well, not everyone does this, but I had a car accident and was on lots of pharmaceutical drugs and sitting in my own flat thinking, how will I ever get better? Because I can't even feel myself, let alone what bit hurts anymore. And on my own bookshelf, that was my bookshelf, was a book called Homeopathy for the Family that I didn't even know existed on my bookshelf, originally, but there it sat. And I looked in there and I discovered homeopathy and Hypericum, and the Helios Pharmacy was around the corner. I was living in Tunbridge Wells, Kent at the time. And I asked my partner, please, wouldn't he go and get these remedies for me? And I stopped taking the drugs and I started taking the remedies, and I could feel where I ached so I could look after myself better. And by the end of them signing me off of work, I'd signed myself up on a 3-year part-time course at the London College of Practical Homeopathy.
That's a pretty cool story. I haven't heard that one before. Amazing.
Heard of homeopathy before.
Oh, wow. I wonder how that book ended up on your shelf.
I wish I knew, but there it sat. There it sat, all quietly waiting for me.
Waiting for the right time, hey? And what are you doing in Wilderness in South Africa? Tell us the journey.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. 21 years ago, I was married with 2 little kids. And my husband and I decided to come to live a more natural life, I suppose, than the one we were living in the UK. And we were divorced almost immediately that we landed in South Africa. And we both decided to stay here for our varied reasons. And I initially was in Cape Town, a place called Komaki. And I'm now I'm attempting to live off-grid in a field in Wilderness, as a woman on her own with a couple of dogs. It's in a community, so there are other people here, thankfully. I wouldn't have done this on my own, but it is a interesting learning curve for me.
Wow. That is very interesting. Very, very interesting. And now you reached out because you do a little bit of a different type of prescribing. Talk to us a little bit about what does homeopathy in South Africa look like for you, and who are your clientele?
So, as you can tell, I'm English, middle class and white. And so my husband and I divorced quite quickly as we got here, as I said. And then I was in no position to hold another person and charge them for my time. I didn't feel it at all. So I did what I thought would be the best thing. I went to a township, a local township to me. It's called Masipumalele, which is Xhosa for let's rest a while. And I went to the clinic there and I spoke to the sister and I said, I'll give you a morning a week for free. Give me a room. So that's what happened. They gave me a translator and I had a line of people outside my door from the get-go. But I did that not through an altruistic, I want to help people in poverty. I did it to help my own confidence because I had none. But what happened was because of that, I had to learn a lot, Urgeny. I had to learn about poverty. I didn't really know about it. When I said to my patients in the township clinic, oh, go buy a bag of oranges, they'd say, I can't afford it. So I had to learn a lot just about the basic needs of people living in poverty, which I was not aware of. And through it, I started doing something that I call guerrilla prescribing, which is why I reached out to you, because I wanted to explain to other homeopaths that it doesn't have to be very complicated. It can be very simple. I mean, Sina as a remedy in this country, I use all the time in townships for worms, simply worms. All these kids coming in, snotty noses, big bellies, starving, but not putting all, you know, all of that. And just give what I don't go into deep prescribing, but a lot of work gets done simply. So like I said, I call it guerrilla prescribing. And in the township, I was next to the vaccination room, which, as you can imagine, as a homeopath, was like next to the devil's spawn. Yeah. So I'd literally run out of my clinic, see my queue, see the vaccination queue, and just lob Thuja, Silica, Leadon, whatever I thought was the daily guerrilla prescribing into every mouth that I could find.
Amazing. The problem and with so that is then they're all going to think that the vaccines work really well because they're not going to have the side effects that they would without the remedies.
But thank goodness.
Exactly. You know? At least they're being helped. You probably understand if I say to you, Sapilanjani.
I don't. I wish I did.
Oh, you have to say hi and disapilaka kushlenkos.
No, you see, you've got to come here. Help me because I still can't speak the lingo.
We did 3 years of Xhosa at school in primary school in South Africa. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a translator and he was wonderful.
Oh, incredible. And what do the people, what do they think of these little white pills that you're throwing in their mouth?
So you would understand this word, muti.
Muti, hey, yeah.
You understand the word muti, yeah. So they just call it muti. And I was initiated as a Sangoma at some point because then I started an NGO and we had 19 therapists and a Sangoma, white Sangoma, came to work with us. And I really began to understand more through the eyes of a Sangoma why homeopathy was acceptable in a township. Because I would get patients to come and see me and they'd say, I have a tummy ache. And I have a tummy ache because my neighbor is jealous of my front door. They put a spell on me. I need muti. You know what I'm saying, hey.
Maybe it's and initially our listeners as well.
So in African tradition, there is more of an understanding of the power of the individual, I think is probably what I want to say here, that our vibrational intentions are powerful. And so in African tradition, a dis-ease, an illness, is often seen as like a curse being put on you by another. Now, I had to learn all of this off the bat. I didn't know what was going on. And I had to stop myself from laughing, which is a terrible thing to say, but it's true. I was like, what? Your neighbor put this on you? But actually, as a homeopath, you can work through those realms as well, using the language that they use to prescribe a remedy. So yeah, it was very hard initially to really get African culture and poverty and realize, you know, I had to find a way through that.
What a huge culture shock for you. And actually, you just made me think of I just did a seminar with Colin Griffith and he talked about this remedy for removing curses. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that. Please tell me about that after this.
Yeah, I will do. That's amazing. So what sort of other things do you treat there and how many days a week are you doing there now?
Okay, so this was in Cape Town and I've recently, like I say, moved to this off-grid living that I'm attempting to do on my own. And excuse me, I am on a farm. So if you hear noises, it's farm noises. So I treat everything, Urgeny, HIV, cancer, TB, puff adder bites, zyx, you name it. You name it. And I've seen it all. In the clinic, there was an HIV center there and a TB center. So I have patients coming from there. I ended up treating all the doctors and nurses and the sisters from the clinic. In fact, this is a beautiful story. One day, the sister came up to me and said, "Rebecca, what are you doing in there?" And I said, "Homeopathy." And she said, "Everyone comes out smiling."
Oh,
that was a very beautiful moment for me. So yeah, as you know, I'm not a special, I don't specialize. I just treat whatever walks through the door, whatever people want to work with me with. I couldn't give you one thing, but obviously in a township, HIV is enormous. And you end up working a lot with that and through the drugs that people are on. I never take people off of the allopathic drugs they're on. Only when they're comfortable to come off of them do I start working in that way. I never change anything because I want people to see that there's a difference. And the only difference that's come in is homeopathy. Then they get confident in homeopathy. Then they'll start weaning themselves off the drugs. And then I can support with more homeopathy.
That's amazing. And do you do this by yourself or is this a charity? Is it part of a homeopathic organization that's over there or how does it run?
Just me.
It's just you. That's incredible. You talked about 19 other practitioners before. Was that in Cape Town and what was that?
So after a year working in the clinic, I heard of a woman who wanted to start an NGO, a wellness morning. So I helped her set up the NGO. Her name is Nicola Cox. And the NGO we set up was called Work for Love. It now is called Bongoletu Foundation. And so we started with this wellness morning and that was an enormous learning curve as well. And I ran it for 3 years, which absolutely exhausted me. I was being asked to adopt people's children when people died of HIV. It's full on and the need is great. I've queued for food parcels for women who've got 4 kids from 4 different husbands or men who have no support at all and they're HIV positive. So it's disastrous at times. And so I had 19 therapists who were working with me. There were yoga teachers, massage therapists, tarot card reader, a Sangoma came in and another homeopath came in with me, Heather Lockyer, totally fabulous homeopath. Here in Cape Town. So I had all these different therapists that were coming in and doing different things for the patients. And we had a very busy practice on a Tuesday morning. We gave them wheatgrass. Everyone had a tot of wheatgrass juice. And people who said to me, "I can't do anything," I said, "Just come and sit in the queue and say hello." Because it's simply that acknowledging another human being. Kindness is a headline thing for me. I like to be hello. I say hello to everyone. So we were all different therapists giving different modalities. Then we got, it's quite a violent story, but you know, South Africa can be quite violent. A little girl of 3 years old was murdered for her body parts. You may want to take this out. And the mothers came to us and said, "We need a safe place for our children." So we swapped tangents from, because we went in there with our, Nicola was German, I'm British. So we went in with our white middle class brains going, "Oh, people need a wellness morning," which yes, people do. But then we shifted focus into schooling for kids. And we've now got 3 schools, which one of them I privately fundraised for. And I'm very proud of the school. We've got over 200 kids. They all get fed every day. They're all treated with homeopathy. I just go in and I do my guerrilla prescribing. Everyone gets Sina for 4 weeks, 1 dose a week for 4 weeks. Then they get Dulcamara for change of season. Then they get Sulfa, which is an African sort of constitutional, not that I really see constitutionals. Yeah. And then I give them a blank. So that takes a seven, that's my 7 week rolling thing. And then I can treat the kids that pop up who need, and it's 3 or 4 kids. Out of 200, I swear to you, you can just blanket prescribe and a lot of work gets done.
I think that's, there were similar themes with Saptarshi Banerjee when he was talking about his, he calls it slum prescribing in India. And he was saying that, and we kind of had this chat because when people are in that much poverty, they cannot afford pharmaceutical drugs anyway. So often their vital forces are much stronger and they react to the remedies really quickly. And the symptom picture is much clearer. It's not like, you know, in clinic, we often have to discern, is this symptom that the client has side effect of the drug or is this the disease symptom? So you don't have any of that when you're doing your type of prescribing.
Not at all. I mean, Yeah, I think I have this suspicion because I told you that I met the most wonderful mentor ever for me, Dr. Elvia Burry, who died unfortunately last year at the age of 94. And her and I just got on like a house on fire. She's 40 years older than me. Collectively, we've got 80 years of homeopathic practice between us, which was just wonderful. And I've been into many African countries with her teaching bishops and pastors homeopathy, and they go into very rural areas to then prescribe. And there's a whole story around that. But I was in Tanzania and I was at the Jeremy Shares Homeopathy Heals in Africa. And I was talking to some of the homeopaths they've trained. And it was a very interesting conversation around education. And this chap said to me, you know, the more educated people become, the more complex the diseases are. He doesn't see anxiety and depression.
Interesting.
And I would agree with this concept that the more we're educated, the more we use this, the more complex. We've got so many words. We don't feel anymore. We yap. And I'm always trying to get people to feel. Like, how does it feel? Not how does it think? How do you feel? And trying to change into that aspect of remembering you've actually got a body. And I do feel that we think too much and we don't feel enough. And that is a gift I have in Africa, is people feel here more. When there's a death in the family, it's not this elongated sort of silent grief that people do, say, in the UK, where we're all a bit stiff upper lip and just get on with it.
Yeah.
Here they wail for 3 days and scream and party and stay up all night and whir and they're done.
Yeah.
You know, there's no hangover. They move through it. Whereas we have all this like thinking and feeling and, oh my word. And so, yeah, it's maybe I'm not going to, people are going to be a bit pissed off, upset with me, but.
No, I agree 100%. Like, I completely believe what you're saying. Talk to me about the bishops. And actually, that lady that you're talking about, I'm sitting here like racking my brain trying to think who it was that I spoke to that said that they were also mentored by her. And I wonder.
Timmerman, Elise Timmerman.
Oh, that's right. How do you know about, how do you know that, did you listen to that podcast episode?
Or how, oh, no, I've met Elise a number of times at my mentor's house.
Okay, because I was thinking, who was it that I spoke to? I'm sure it was somebody that mentioned her. Okay.
Yeah, because Elise had a house near my mentor's.
Oh, she was in Hermanus, hey?
South Africa. Correct, and that's where Elvia used to
live. Okay, excellent. I've got the pieces together now. So did Elvia have these connections with the bishops?
So I've just been writing her homeopathic life story because I interviewed Elvia for about 2 years before she died. I would spend a week every month in Hermanus taking Elvia's patients. Although Elvia practiced till the day she died. I promise you, she was giving out remedies till the day she died. She's a remarkable woman. I am totally honored to know her and have had so much time with her. So her husband died. Her husband was the CEO of Unilever.
Interesting.
Interesting. And would never talk to her about homeopathy. So when he died, she then somehow, because Elvia, there's so many stories about Elvia that I could tell you, but somehow she met these Anglican, she went to an Anglican church and she met these people who had invited all these bishops and pastors from Africa to Hermanus. And they said, oh, we'd love to be able to, you know, there's no medicine in Africa in the darkest places. And she said, well, let me teach them. So she taught about 20 bishops and pastors in Hermanus homeopathy. She gave them Red Cross first aid. And then she taught basic homeopathy, but basic in the fact of treating HIV, cholera, epidemics that we have in Africa.
Malaria.
She then got a message from the allied health professionals here in South Africa telling her that, and I think she was 83 at the time, telling her that if she didn't desist, they would lock her in prison.
No.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, she then thought, right, okay, well, if they won't let me practice here, I'll go into Africa. So that's what she did.
So she traveled at 83 into Africa to go and continue.
We were traveling. Her and I were traveling up until, it was only lockdown that stopped us traveling. We were going into Africa 3 times a year. So she would be 92 still traveling.
Wow.
Anyway, so then through the bishops and pastors that she trained originally, she said to them, in your congregations, tell me who would be relevant to train. And so then we would go in. She paid for everything, all the remedies, all the accommodation, all the travel for them, for me, for her son, and for our accountant. And we would go in and we would train. It was manna from heaven for me. And still on, where are we? Friday, Tuesday, we met with all the bishops and pastors who are like the heads in the different areas, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia. There were 10 of us on the call. And we are now regrouping to find out how to move forwards with what Elvia has left in her will for the Mission School of Medicine, which is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And Guy, her son, who is also a homeopath, and I are going to be managing what's going on going forwards. And hopefully traveling up, but really they are, it's amazing the work they do, Eugenie, that it's amazing. And they use remedies like you and I would never use, sort of a bit hair raising at times, just, you know, on the groups. I go, oh my goodness. If my college or if the regent saw this, everyone would go, great, but it works.
Do you mean in the way of how they administer or how they prescribe or how do you mean?
Yeah, so they'll get an HIV patient with high blood pressure and diabetes and give them the remedies that we recommended or taught them, HIV, high blood pressure and diabetes. So we give the Nozode, HIV Nozode, mm-hmm. once a week. We give Syzygium for diabetes, and we give a high blood pressure complex that Elvia came up with, Glonoin Cactus, and I can't remember the third one. And they'll give all of them. Vroom.
Amazing.
But it works.
Nothing surprises me anymore. I was going to ask, have you heard of the Narayani remedies?
And Elvia worked with Norma in Durban.
Did she? Oh.
Yeah, and I was taught Narayani at the London College of Practical Homeopathy. So yeah, she used to do Norma before she became Narayani. She used to run Norma's practice when she went away in Durban.
That's really cool to
Elvia,
know.
I'm just thinking
there should be like a podcast about Elvia, but maybe you should wait until you've released your book and then we'll get you back on the show and we have an episode about Elvia. So we don't have any spoiler
alerts. I'd
love to,
because at the moment I'm crunching through the information from the students over 13 years, which I can assure you is probably the hardest part because of how Africans deliver information and speak. So I'm trying to translate what they're telling me. It isn't straightforward. So I'm actually sort of wading at the moment, but it is remarkable work there from her vision. And her vision, Eugenie, was to prove that homeopathy works. That's it. Mm. That's it. Through giving it to people, letting them run, and off they run, and in places where they've got no medicine, they're doing work. I mean, some of these guys will travel to a cholera epidemic and give the cholera remedy and have 160 people cured.
Amazing.
It's amazing.
The skeptics are so hard on the homeopaths are trying to eliminate homeopathy, because it's just, you know, got such a safe, effective... And cost-effective.
I know, non-toxic. Exactly. But, you know, we've got the WHO driving around all over Africa and their shiny big black cars taking us out.
Wow.
If you don't have this, if you don't have that, imprisonment for 2 years, da-da-da-da-da, registration, expensive registration. You know the story, Eugenie. You know what's going on. And it's hard. I've been shut down because I qualified in the UK. And that's how I met Elvia, because I got shut down and threatened with imprisonment.
Wow.
In 2014. And she then got hold of me and her, and I just vibed. Mm. So grateful that I met her. Mm.
The puff adder bites, I made a note here because I just wanted to ask you about that, because that's something that we've had somebody else on the show mention about using remedies for snake bites. But tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what I want to tell you, first of all, is 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to touch puff adder unwittingly. I was in the vegetable garden cleaning up some comfrey, and I put my hands under the comfrey bush and I touched something that went, and I was like, what's that? So I lifted it up and there's this enormous The next day, a night adder came out from underneath my shik shack. Anyway, it's obviously a snake time. So obviously Bitis ariens, I'll probably say it wrong, but Bitis ariens I give. But recently I treated somebody who was bitten twice by the same puff adder. She stood on it and it went twice into her foot. Her husband rushed her to hospital. Yeah. We gave her remedies as she's going to the car, but she went and they gave her the most amount of antivenom they've ever given to anyone. It loaded the whole lot of juveniles, so it just dumped twice all its venom. Unbelievable. Anyway, one of the most amazing things that I use, and it's not homeopathic, and she actually taught me this, is moringa and turmeric poultice on anything. It draws, it cleans, it's remarkable. But when I gave her Leadum Hydra, I was giving it as a 5M because she could feel the puncture wounds. And so I was giving high dose Leadum and she could feel the venom pull back whenever she took the Leadum. It was very first aid driven. And I didn't have the bitis initially. So we had to get that in from Cape Town. But Leadum, everything you would think of, and blood, like echinacea for the blood, and really just supporting. I mean, I find a lot of my work, particularly in townships, and it's first aid. A lot of it is first aid and acutes. I treat people with diseases because of living in wetlands and they're literally walking in water all the time because that is where their shack is. So I've got used to working in a different way. And then obviously I have a private practice where you spend time and there's different needs. So everyone has different, it's individualized, of course. I love volunteering and I volunteered for a horse sanctuary, an old age home. I'm now volunteering down here at a school that only has children that are disadvantaged who are born brain damaged with HIV. Their mother has taken drugs all the way. You can imagine, you know the story.
Oh my God.
So these kids are in a bit of a state. And I mean, one of the kids who's recently come to the school lives on a rubbish tip with his mother and the 1.5-year-old baby. The stories you hear. And you do become, and for any middle class Western homeopath, it's quite shocking. But I'm 20 years in, you get used to these really dramatic stories that I work with. There's some stories that I've tried to publish in a homeopathic magazine and the guy said I can't have it, it's too hectic to hear because townships are violent places. They really are.
I've noticed you've got a bit of a South African yah, but the rest of the accent is still there. Yah is a great word. Holy moly. Have you got any other stories about your prescribing or the when you're going into the townships and things?
Yeah, one of my stories I like to tell is there's bushfires here. You know about the bushfires. And a bushfire can rage and take out townships, the whole, because shacks are, you know, cheap to jowl. Everyone's living so close together. And there was a bushfire in a township near me, not Masipumalele, another one. We call it a location. And 100 shacks were burnt to the ground straight away. And I go up with my traveling homeopathic kit that has about 100 remedies in it. And for some reason, I get only pregnant women coming to me. And one of the women who came to me was 5 months pregnant. And she said she watched the fire burn down her shack and her baby stopped moving. And she hasn't slept all night and she's lost everything she owns. And the baby, did I say that? The baby stopped moving. She hasn't felt it move since she watched it. So I just gave her Aconite 200, three doses. I said to her, I want to see you back here tomorrow morning. If not, you're going straight to the hospital. She came back the next morning. And typically, as we know in homeopathy, the person changes. So this woman walks in and she sits down and she's not restless anymore. And I'm like, oh, yeah, who's? Oh, yeah. I said, how are you? She said, well, I slept all night. My baby's moving. And I realized that everything that got burnt, I can get again.
Wow.
So she totally changed with 3 doses of Aconite 200. That was it.
So satisfying. Why wouldn't you want to be a homeopath? Like, why wouldn't you choose this as a job? It's like, it's so satisfying. There's so many challenging things.
I know.
I'm literally sitting here trying to think what other job could possibly be as satisfying as getting results like that. It's just wonderful.
I know. And then there was one at the school where my kids were at and all the kids were the fire again and all the kids were taken out. They're all sitting in this field and I hear the fire and I go up again and I just give Aconite to everyone because the kids are screaming and everything's going off. Pop, 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 pop. Literally 200 kids. I'm just running around popping all the teachers. Everybody gets, and you just feel this. Yeah, I feel very honored to be able to come here with the gift of homeopathy because it's a vocation. It's not a job. And to be able to give it away give it away. You know, give it away. Like you say, it's not an expensive thing. Obviously, my knowledge is really the expensive thing now after 30 years. And I want to teach. I want to teach this. I want to inspire homeopaths into knowing there's many different ways of getting it out there. And it's not just your paying patients. We can't only be aligned with paying patients. And I went to the London College of Practical Homeopathy, and that really served me well. My first homework was take a case. Don't give a remedy, take a case. Because that's the hardest thing. Listening, paying attention. Before anything else, you've actually got to observe somebody and sort of smell them out. And Robert Davidson was the principal at the time. And he said to us all, God's 10%, give 10% of your practice away. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I haven't got that ratio right. It's probably 50-50 at the moment. But I can't help myself. All the people who live on the farm, I teach the pastor here. He's an beautiful Malawian African man. I teach him, his congregation. I want people to be able to help themselves and feel confident. And we can give that away. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want to inspire people with, is I've got a million stories, but the remedies are sort of uninteresting. It's the what you can do with homeopathy, mm-hmm. how we can all guerrilla prescribe, actually.
That's incredible. And your paying clients, are they mostly from overseas or local? Do you see people online or in person?
Both. Yeah, okay. Both.
Amazing. Yeah. Is there any final message that you want to leave our listeners with?
Like you say, there is no finer vocation. There is no more honorable thing one can do but to be in service to everyone who comes to you, every being, whether it's a horse or a chicken or a human or a dog. The water, I mean, I put remedies into water, vast bodies of water, to change vibration into the ocean. We can do such work. I do as an acupuncture into the soil. When I move a plant, I give it whatever I feel is going on, shock, aconite, silica, if it's looking a bit weedy. We can prescribe in so many varied ways. Let's get out of just being in a clinic one-on-one. We can do so much work, and now is our time. Now is our time, as people are wobbling because big pharma's desire for money and keeping you hooked in is really coming to the fore. Now is the time for homeopathy and other healing modalities that are vibrational, and we are all vibrational beings, so let's get on with it.
I don't think you could have any more powerful a message. That was just perfectly summed up, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. You're preaching to the converted here, because I have said exactly those words. You've summed it up perfectly. I think we need to take that, what you've just said, as a sound bite and make that go viral. Because I completely agree with you. You know, we have this unbelievable, safe, cost-effective answer to heal the planet, healing the waterways, healing the plants, healing the animals, healing the people. It's just there for us to use. It's just this incredible universal gift for anyone who is open-minded enough to enjoy this beautiful, beautiful gift that we've got. Thank you so much for opening our minds. I really appreciate it, and sharing your knowledge with us. Where can people get hold of you in the work that you do?
I also lecture about the dangers of Wi-Fi and social media. So I'd have none of that. I don't even have a website anymore. It's probably the wrong thing to do. But yeah, I have an email address that people can get hold of.
I'll put your email address in the show notes.
I'll give it to you afterwards. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It was heaps of fun. Please finish off that book about Alva. I can't wait to read that. And then we'll have you back on the show to have a chat about her life, because that sounds fascinating.
I would be absolutely honored, because I do have an enormously deep insight into her because of the interviewing of her.
Amazing. I'll chat with you soon.